Hello, my name is Divya.
And I'm Lucy.
And we're here with the Brickley Political Review. And today we're going to be discussing one of the most, if not the most, prominent hallmark of American capitalism, Coca-Cola, and what this multi-billion dollar company can tell us about the past and the future of the Chinese market.
So companies that we consider hallmarks of American capitalism, like Coca-Cola and Boeing, for example, have long had a rocky history in the Chinese economy. And a new company that looks like it's on shaky ground with China is TikTok. But even long after these products were first introduced in China or were first produced in China, they have a long history of shaky ground with China and the U.S.
Okay, so as two hallmarks of American capitalism, what do Boeing and Coca-Cola tell us about that evolution, the maintenance of Chinese markets, and where does it stand today?
So as it stands today, the Chinese economy is fairly friendly to Boeing and Coke. China is the third largest market for Coca-Cola after the United States and Mexico. China opened up to Coke in 1927. It was banned by Mao in 1949 and reintroduced to China in 1979. Meanwhile, Boeing is just now being reintroduced to the Chinese market after a four-year hiatus, where in 2019, China instituted a ban on imports of the 737 MAX airplane, but the recent delivery of a 737 MAX to China represents a slight opening in the Chinese market. Meanwhile, in the U.S. Congress, a bill was just passed requiring TikTok's owner company, ByteDance, which has ties to the CCP, to sell TikTok's operations to American companies or be banned from the United States App Store, citing concerns of spying on Americans, data theft, and algorithm adjustment, which has the power to shape public opinion here in America. And the Chinese government has said it opposes the sale of TikTok to American companies, highlighting that businesses between the U.S. and China are still on shaky ground today.
Wow. Okay, but less than a decade ago, we saw so many foreign investors that were so eager to invest in China's slowly opening economy. What has changed since then?
Yeah, so President Xi Jinping has had pretty skittish economic policy making decisions lately, with regulatory crackdowns on tech, a looming property crisis, and a very slow recovery from COVID, which have all scared off foreign investors. And just today, a bill in Hong Kong has passed, which claims to be for national security reasons, but in actuality, it cracks down on vague political crimes, causing many foreign investors to even leave Hong Kong, which is supposed to be a free safe haven in China or a sovereign city in China. More prescient, many foreign investors are scared about the shaky ground of commerce between the United States and China. So what does the history of American capitalism, and specifically a company as quintessentially capitalistic as Coca-Cola, tell us about profit and capitalist relations between China and the rest of the world, specifically the U.S.?
Well, okay, in order to do that, we kind of need to rewind back to when Coca-Cola forms as a company.
Okay.
So let me give you a little history lesson.
Okay.
So 1886, Prohibition is in full swing in Atlanta and Fulton County because they've just passed Prohibition legislation. And that's when a guy named John Stith Pemberton, who's an American pharmacist, responds with a non-alcoholic version of Pemberton's French wine Coca. And it's marketed as Coca-Cola, the temperance drink. And from there, it gains monumentum with people from the temperance movement. It's also sold for 5 cents a glass.
Oh, wow.
How much do we pay for Coke these days?
Probably like $3.
Oh, that feels about right. Yeah, at least. Well, in 1888, Pemberton gives the ownership rights to a businessman by the name of Asa Griggs Candler. And it's Candler who utilizes marketing techniques that lead Coca-Cola to completely dominate the global soft drink market all the way up to the present day. Whilst Pemberton used to sell syrup to local soda fountains, Candler in 1899, he is the one who makes sure that the Coca-Cola company signs its first agreement with an independent bottling company, which was allowed to buy the syrup, produce, bottle, and distribute the Coca-Cola drink.
Okay, Divya, I have to ask this.
Go for it.
Was cocaine in the original recipe of Coca-Cola, like rumors say?
You know what, Lucy? It was.
Oh, my gosh.
It really was. All the way up to 1914.
Wow.
I know, for that long.
Wow, crazy. That's crazy.
It really is. Well, actually, to this day, though, the exact proportions of Coca-Cola, like the ingredients that go in it, still a trade secret.
Okay, but there's no cocaine. Cocaine.
That I promise
you. Okay, because no I'm cocaine. Pretty sure it was banned in 1914. Yeah. Oh,
definitely was.
Okay, good.
And then in 1946, the company purchases rights to Fanta, which was a soft drink previously developed in Germany.
So it looks like they're becoming like a global superpower. Oh, yes.
There's slowly, the stretch is getting wider and wider across the world. And we can really see that in 1978. China lets in Coca-Cola as the first foreign company, and Coca-Cola is the only company that's allowed to sell cold packaged drinks in the PRC.
Wow.
And this is really surprising because, as we discussed earlier, Coca-Cola, it's so capitalist. So when we look back at this moment of China opening up to the world, it really begs the question, why Coca-Cola? Why would China sign with a carbonated form of American capitalism?
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure the PRC, especially under Mao, was not a capitalist country.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
And that's why, not to call Deng Xiaoping capitalist, which he absolutely is not, but he is a stark difference from Mao.
Yeah.
And I think there's a phrase that many scholars use to describe Deng Xiaoping, and that's he used to... quote, groping stones across a river.
Okay, Divya, what does groping stones across a river mean?
Well, it means that unlike Mao, he wouldn't have these plans and specific reforms for every year. You know, Mao with his year plans.
Yeah.
But yeah. Deng, he wasn't as preoccupied with creating like that perfect communist economy. He would be okay with reforming, with enacting one reform at a time.
Okay, so no cultural revolution.
Absolutely no cultural revolution.
Okay.
That being said, don't get me wrong. Deng, very CCP. He is the CCP.
Yeah.
But he didn't have that same obsession with cult of personality like Mao did. And what we see Xi Jinping having today.
Okay.
And one of the biggest reasons that Deng Xiaoping has all these economic reforms is because he really prioritizes education. He opens the universities back up. He wants economists on his team, not just people who have a lot of power and money. He wants people who know about the economy. And that's really different than Mao, obviously. And it's also a little different than what we're seeing in China today with Xi Jinping, specifically when it comes to that control over the education sector. Mm-hmm. So the LA Times did a piece a while ago, actually, and there was a professor by the name of Sun Piodong, and she taught a course on the Cultural Revolution. And this was obviously a no-no because under Xi Jinping's leadership, the party banned discussion in 2013 of quote-unquote Western concepts.
Wow.
And this includes the party's historical errors.
And we're seeing that kind of in Hong Kong today, right?
Yeah.
With the recent bill that passed.
Exactly,
today.
Yes.
Okay.
So this crackdown is just like, it's an example of why the Coca-Cola that... the Deng who opened up China to the economy, who signed with Coca-Cola, it's more difficult for us to see that happening in China today.
Definitely. So why exactly is Coca-Cola seen as quintessential American capitalism?
Okay, well, so this is really interesting. In my research for this, I came upon this New York Times article that was archived, and it's from 1993.
Okay.
And basically this article starts with talking about how, like, we're throwing it back to May 1991.
What happened in May 1991?
Well, we're at the headquarters of the Coca-Cola company in Atlanta. There's an executive and a visitor, and they're talking, and then they've been interrupted with the news that Rajiv Gandhi, the former prime minister of India, has just been assassinated.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And you know what the executive mutters? He goes, well, that's not good for us.
Okay, but why would the assassination of the Indian prime minister have anything to do with an American soda company?
Well, here's the thing. At this point, Coca-Cola has become so much more than that. It's really outstretched its reach across the globe, making that any conflict, any problem that happens in a country, Coca-Cola's business due to their profits.
Okay, so what are some other examples of, like, international shocks in politics that have affected Coca-Cola?
See, company. I got a whole Rolodex for that.
Okay.
And you know what? I feel like we really see Coca-Cola being cemented as that hallmark of American capitalism during World War II.
Interesting.
And let me tell you what happens in Germany.
Okay.
So basically in Germany, Coca-Cola is concerned that the German youth are not, they're not buying Coca-Cola and they're not contributing to profits. So to counter this, they do something terrible. The Coke's German branch passes out sodas at Hitler Youth rallies, and these Coke bottles are displaying huge swastikas.
So you're telling me that an American company, I get it, it's their German branch, but Coca-Cola is still an American company, produced Coke bottles with swastikas on them?
Yes, headquarters in Atlanta, but yes, their German branch, 100% didn't. I think this is just, it's just one of the, like, the examples of how they're so profits-minded. They're so, what they, all they see is the dollar signs.
So they're definitely, this definitely sounds like a company that is ready to place profits over value.
Yes, yeah. And we see that, we also see that they kind of help other countries subvert, like, they're okay with not even seeming capitalists. For instance, there's a Russian war hero, Marshal Zhukov, okay?
Okay.
And when Eisenhower introduces Coke to this guy, he likes it.
Yeah.
But he was worried that he knew that Stalin wasn't going to react well to someone drinking Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
So Coca-Cola doesn't care. They're okay that you know, Stalin doesn't like American imperialism. They remove the caramel color of the soda. And they put the drink in a clear bottle with a white cap and a red star. And you know what they call this?
What they call it?
They call it White Coke.
Wow.
50 cases.
Wow.
Yes. So they don't, basically what we can learn is they will do anything for profits, but they're also okay with not necessarily having an identity as like American capitalism. They're okay with subverting it when, if the profits align.
That's kind of funny that the way that they become the most quintessentially American capitalist company is by hiding their capitalism.
Literally,
sometimes,
yes.
To make profits in countries that are definitely not capitalist.
Exactly. It's crazy. When I read this article, Lucy, oh my God. Yeah.
So, okay. What's next then with Coca-Cola, with China, with companies in China?
Well, here's the thing. And I think what we need to consider is that China's always been a little difficult for American economists to understand.
Okay.
In the last 30 years, we've been seeing all sorts of debates. Like, look at pre-COVID. I remember seeing debates on, does China do capitalism better than America?
Oh, you know, interesting.
Crazy statement,
yeah.
Right? And we've just been seeing, and even in the Deng Xiaoping era, we saw people finding it difficult to call China a communist country because they're like, oh, look, market reforms are happening. Is China capitalist? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Right? So it's very hard. It's really hard for American economists to do that. And I think it's no surprise that China has experienced like a remarkable growth rate, right? And it's surpassed many countries. And like the rapid industrialization is also very confusing for American economists to understand. But in my opinion, and I think you've discussed this too, when we talk about skittish policymaking, another big thing is, we always discuss that there's a secrecy like going on in the CCP, right? And that they don't have like, you know, there's no free press. Everyone doesn't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think the secrecy is a huge, Susan Shirk has a really good piece on this. Okay. But basically it's this idea that we don't really know what's going on. There's no transparency.
Yeah.
So before Xi Jinping, there's Hu Jintao. He understands that people aren't, they don't want to invest if they don't really know what's going on. So he doesn't, don't get me wrong, he doesn't make it really transparent or anything, but he understands that and he opens up a little bit. But Xi Jinping clamps right back down.
Definitely.
Yes. And I do think that's a huge reason we're seeing such a difference in the Chinese market today compared to 20 years ago.
Yeah. And I think we see the Chinese market today and we understand that they're on very shaky ground with the United States. But I think I could see the difference between a company like TikTok, which is at risk of being banned if they don't fully divest from China, as opposed to a company like Coca-Cola, which is an American company that is basically allowed to roam free in China.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because Coca-Cola is just a drink. Anyone can drink it. It doesn't affect your ideology. As Coca-Cola has been willing to show is that they can hide whatever forms of American capitalism is in their roots to more to the customs of another country. Whereas something like TikTok, it's not just a drink. It's a news source for many young Americans. It can shape the ideologies of many people around the world. And so a company like this isn't allowed to unleash the full potential of American capitalism. And many people do see that it does need government crackdown on it. And whereas Coca-Cola isn't something that governments are as pressed to crack down on, even a country like China or the Soviet Union, you saw that Coca-Cola was able to exist there.
And also, I forgot to mention this earlier, but it's so interesting. One other thing which makes like scholars so shocked about China and Coca-Cola in the past was that tabloids, the periodicals in China would literally refer to it as Coca colonization, or I believe cola colonization.
Cola colonization.
And it's just, I don't know, it's crazy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just think that's really interesting because I think we'll continue to see something like TikTok face government pressure in the United States and in China with the Chinese version of TikTok. And whereas something like Coca-Cola, I think no matter how shaky markets get, I think it'll still be able to exist in whatever country.
Oh, 100%. Their profits-minded just outlook, the way that everything is just seen through those dollar bills.
Exactly.
They'll be around for a long time. All right. And this is Divya.
And this is Lucy. Thank you so much for listening to Barely Political today.
And we'll see you next time.